This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The days are shorter. The leaves are changing. We're cheering for football teams. It's fall. That means it's time to say hello to Keith Taylor, here with his picks for our fall reading. Keith is a poet and writer who coordinates the undergrad creative writing program at the University of Michigan. Hello, Keith. So where are we starting?
Well, with somebody you've talked to not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago, Bill Morris, with a novel, a crime novel called Motor City Burning.
We had a really interesting conversation with Bill, and yes, very much so. And I'm going to pretend we didn't do that now. So if you all listen to that conversation, hit the delete button for a minute, because we want to get Keith's take on Motor City Burning and why you feel it's a good fall pick.
Okay, I will. Well, the title, as some people will realize, comes from that great John Lee Hooker song, "Oh, the Motor City." City's burning, it ain't no thing in the world that I can do. My hometown is burning down to the ground, worser than Vietnam. One of the great blues songs of the last 50 years, covered by lots of bands, particularly lots of Detroit bands. I think it's written, you know, this iconic novel, and a novel written about iconic moments in Detroit's history. The first of all, the riots in 67, and that's where the Hooker song comes from, of course, that moment that shaped so much of the history of the city, and it's been seen, rightly or wrongly, as the defining moment of race relations in the city. And then a year after that, of course, 1968, the Tigers run to the World Series. Only a year later, it suddenly felt like we were all on the same side, as if we were all brothers in the city.
Yes.
But, of course, like so many of those sports moments, they feel
great
when they happen. It's ephemeral.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
He creates two very interesting characters. You probably talked to him about them, both of whom are really attractive. There's Willie Bledsoe, who's a recent immigrant to Detroit from the South, disillusioned black activist who may or may not be involved in the last unsolved murder that took place during the riots. And then, of course, there's the cop investigating the murder, Frank Doyle. Irish-American, relentless, just, you know, like cops are supposed to be.
Right.
It sounds as if the book would go in only one way. We'd end up with a clear sense of right and wrong. We'd find out who did it, and everything would be resolved.
And it does mix true fact with
this fiction because there was this last unsolved murder. Absolutely,
yeah.
And then everything about the riots is right. But Morris doesn't let us off that easily. I don't want to give too much away, even though we've talked a lot about him here. But it's enough to say that the book is morally complex, more thought-provoking than spine-tingling. But the best thing about it, for those of us who know Detroit, are the descriptions of the city in the late 60s, of buildings and neighborhoods that no longer exist, of the old industrial giant that has been inevitably diminished. There were lots of wonderful descriptive moments that might seem horrible to someone who lives elsewhere, but that we recognize as true and even beautiful. And there's a bunch of them. There's wonderful descriptions about the factories and everything. I just picked out this one early on to read it right at the end here. So this is Willie remembering his first winter in Detroit, an experience all of us have had and will have shortly, although maybe I should remind people
Let's not go there.
Right. The neighborhood was shabby. Glass glittering on the sidewalks, houses in need of paint, black bruises on the street where cars had leaked their vital fluids. In the shadows between houses, there were still gray slag heaps of unmelted snow. In April, surviving his first Detroit winter was not something Willie was going to forget anytime soon. One day, he was sitting in buttery sunshine in Palmer Park, reading the autobiography of Malcolm X, watching swans glide across the pond, marveling at the palette of trees, the bloody reds, the juicy oranges, the richest colors he'd ever seen. The next morning, he awoke to a blizzard. The first of his life, a storm had come howling down out of Canada in the night and dumped a foot of snow on the city.
So true. And as someone who grew up in Ferndale and knew Detroit, and I was in high school when all of that happened, it was like watching – when you watch Mad Men, and if you grew up in that era and the detailing is so exquisite, you go, my word, that look, you know, Sally Draper's bedroom looks like my bedroom when I was seven. There were so many true things. I used to ice skate at Palmer Park.
Oh, did you really? Where the swans were. Yeah,
absolutely.
No, it's great. I mean, he really has a good memory, a sharp memory of the city. Although I don't believe he's lived here for 40 years.
No, not for a long, long time. Yeah. And you don't have to have lived through it to find it a good read.
It's true. You don't. But if you want that education of what the city was like in the late 60s, it's good.
All right. So that's Bill Morris, Motor City Burning.
All right. So now a very different book by a woman named Roxane Gay. It's a book of essays called Bad Feminist. Might be a little bit of a stretch to call her a Michigan writer because she came to Michigan to do a doctorate in technical writing, but way up at Michigan Tech up in Houghton. There she, by the way, she helped found a literary magazine called Pank, which New York Times said was one of the 15 best places for a young writer to publish in Houghton. You know, which is incredible. She's left now. She finished her degree and she's gone off. But and this year she's published both a novel, which has gotten a really nice bit of attention, and this interesting collection of essays, which I like a lot.
All right.
I want to first of all just give you her definition of bad feminism, because I think it's important for understanding the rest of the book. I openly embrace the label of bad feminist. I do so because I am flawed and human. I'm not terribly well-versed in feminist history. I'm not as well-read in key feminist texts as I would like to be. I have certain interests and personality traits and opinions that may not fall in line with mainstream feminism, but I am still a feminist. I cannot tell you how freeing it has been to accept this about myself. So you get a little bit of the tone of what she's doing and how important the idea is to her. It's a feminism that isn't perfect, but that becomes the lens through which she understands our culture and perhaps most importantly, her place in it. She is smart, funny, angry, confident, yet often winningly self-deprecating. She writes about the rights of women, about the issues that confront a young black intellectual. She writes about sex and film, about the images we've created of girls and the roles we stick people in because of their race or gender orientation. One essay will begin with Vanessa Williams and the Miss American pageant, and the very next one will begin by discussing Judith Butler, who's one of the most intellectually demanding feminist critics out there. Gay will write about 50 Shades of Grey and the Hunger Games, but always she will keep herself in the picture, making it clear that this is one person's engagement with this particular idea. Here's how she describes her first encounter with the Hunger Games. I do most of my leisure reading at the gym. I hate exercise. Yes, it's good for you and weight loss and whatever, but normally I work out and want to die. I knew I was in love with the Hunger Games when I did not want to get off the treadmill. The book captivated me. I wanted to stay in the world Collins created. More than that, the Hunger Games moved me. There was so much at stake, so much drama, and it was all so intriguing, so hypnotizing, so intense and dark. I particularly appreciated what the book got right about strength and endurance, suffering and survival. I found myself gasping and hissing and even bursting into tears more than once. I looked insane, but I did not care. I was completely without shame. So see her doing her thing at the gym,
Relatable.
Crying over the Hunger Games.
I think when you, as you say, when she says I'm an imperfect feminist, then virtually so is everybody who's reading her book.
Exactly.
So we can kind of see ourselves in what she's saying. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So that is Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist collection of essays.
Great. Next one is a book, a collection of short stories by Andy Mozina. M-O-Z-I-N-A. It's called Quality Snacks.
I like that name.
It is. It's a great title. And that, of course, has to be the story I read from later on. Like Roxane Gay, it's really wide-ranging. It's got a lot of different things going on. It's funny. It's sarcastic. It's satirical. And it's also really smart. It also gets frightening. It gets quite frightening from time to time. Mozina, who teaches, by the way, over in Kalamazoo, at Kalamazoo College, he's put together these stories, they're connected with this sort of general idea of weird things happen at the most common moments. A little bit of the wonderful intersects with our lives in places we don't expect.
This sounds like something good to read Halloween week.
Oh, well, some of this would fit, I think, yeah. Of course, the lives aren't really ours, even when we recognize them. The title story, Quality Snacks, is filled with second-level management types for the Frito-Lay Corporation. Now, I've never met any of these people who work for Frito-Lay, but they seem real. Their concerns seem real. But forgive me, anybody out there who works for Frito-Lay, there's also something really wonderfully silly about them. Here's the opening page of the story. You get a sense, by the way, he does these wonderful first sentences all the way through. So this is the first opening paragraph of the story called Quality Snacks. Assembled there in a fifth-floor conference room at the North American headquarters in Plano were 12 of Frito-Lay's finest minds. No, we weren't the very top of the org chart, though Helen was VP for Consumer Strategy, Insights, and Growth, but we represented a crucial creative force. I believed a company was driven by its products, period. As a senior project scientist for the Doritos platform, I had devoted my entire professional career to creating quality snacks. What's that phrase? Senior project scientist for the Doritos platform. You know, it's
and everybody automotive listening to that could probably go, exactly. that could be us too. Yeah. One of our many meetings,
right? Although you know, Doritos is maybe a little bit different than escorts. But and again, those first sentences, he just does first sentences.
Pulls you right in, huh?
Yeah. Every story, they're all different. They're all different lengths. They're funny. You go, whoa! I want to read that. So it's a lot of fun.
So that's Andy Mojinas from Kalamazoo College.
From Kalamazoo College.
His collection of short stories called Quality Snack.
The last one, here's our time for a book of poems. This is by a young poet named Jamal May. The book is called Hum. Jamal May is a member of a group of young poets. I'm not sure they're a school, but, you know, there's certainly a bunch of them, all between 30 and 40, I think, and they all come out of Detroit. And they're creating some of the best poems in the country. They're winning all the big awards. Everybody's paying attention to them. It's great. Their first books are all out now. Some of them are into their second books. They're really, really the focus of so much of this work that's getting attention is Detroit. Some of them have their roots, their professional roots in a lot of the performance venues that popped up around the city in the last, say, quarter century. But others are very tied to that solitary job of sitting there in a room and working alone on the page. They do all seem to know each other, and they support each other. They help keep each other going. They get each other published, even as their lives and careers take them in and out of the city. Jamal may be the best of the lot. His first book, which is this, is called Hum. It was published last year, and that title is, you know, for three little letters, it tells us a lot. It's a word we use when we can't quite remember a song but want to sing it anyway. We hum. It's the noise that is happening beneath everything else we're doing. There's a hum down there. He writes a sestina, which is a really complicated longish form with repeated words, about the Windsor hum, by the way, that some folks keep hearing over there across the river. They blame it on Zug Island.
Yes.
I think the poem is called The Hum for Zug Island. Here's one, a poem to end on, that just feels real Detroit to me. It's filled with images of work and metal, of cars and love. Hum of the machinist's lover. There is zinc under your breastplate. Copper in your throat. I polish your steel to a shimmer before even considering the music. Your tutu, a nickel-plated half-circle with pleats hammered one by one. Eyes flicker like flashlights are behind them because flashlights are behind them, wired to panels triggered by my touch. Place your cold pincer against my fleshy palm. Lean forward on your wheels. In a voice like cotton, hum us a melody from the speaker box I soldered to your belly. It's fine if you're afraid. Tell me where it aches. Tell me where rust encroaches. I know what oxygen does to your surface. How could I not? I am breath and air and air.
How many times have I said around here to the stateside team, I love poems when Keith reads them to me?
All right.
That is wonderful.
Read it yourself. Take that one home and read it yourself.
Yeah. So just to recap, our first choice that Keith Taylor offered was Bill Morris, Motor City Burning, Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist Collection of Essays, Andy Mojina, Quality Snacks Collection of Short Stories. That I'm jumping on that one. And Jamal Gay's
Jamal
May Hum.
Oh, we've got two rhyming authors.
Yes,
that didn't
we do.
Occur to
we have okay. Yeah. Jamal May's Hum is a collection of poems. His first book, and the one Keith read us, was Hum of the Machinist's Lover. Great choices to get us through fall, which means we send you back with a order for our winter reading. We'll check in sooner than we probably
start making
want
my
to.
List. Yeah.
Poet and writer Keith Taylor coordinates the undergraduate creative writing program at the University of Michigan. As always, it's a pleasure.
Pleasure is all mine, Cynthia. Thank you.